ओम ज्ञानेतमरंदस्य ज्ञानंजनाशयाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकदामायं यदाति सापदन्तिकम् कृपा सिन्धु भयेभ्य च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासुदेव गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So greetings from the Sun Falls, Stuyvesant Falls. I just got back last night from the New York City. I went down a few days ago, and for kirtan, they had a six-hour kirtan at the Boom Street Temple, which is an incredible place. Just so many various people coming, not necessarily the ISKCON congregation, actually a small percentage was, but so many people just love kirtan, and they had Gauravani and Nanta Achyuta. And then I went to another kirtan last night at Yogamaya in the city that way. That ended at 11:30, and then we came back late last night here. So the tenor of the classes here on Wednesday, right now I have the inspiration to keep them more informal than structured, in the sense that I'm not teaching a particular text. I haven't been inspired which one I should teach. So basically, the ideas, thoughts, and seminars that I give, I'll kind of summarize them or just discuss some of the a seminar I've been giving recently is called the Yoga of Forgiveness. It's not, you know, I don't make any amazing claims for people to get over deep traumas, but I do make a good case that one should, especially in terms of self-realization. And I base it on the fact that ahimsa or nonviolence is at the root of yoga, because yoga is a progressive ladder. It starts with yam and then niyam. Yam means it's all about controlling the mind. Spiritual life is about controlling the mind. If you follow your impulses, if you're not imbued with love of God, which are your spontaneous impulses, where your consciousness is completely pure, then your impulses are born of the materialistic ego, the conception that I am the enjoyer and controller, the conception that roots us to the material body and is the cause of all our suffering. The soul is not transforming. The body and mind is. It's the quality of matter is vikara, the transformation. So our suffering is due to a misidentification with the body and mind. which causes to suffer the transformations of the body and mind. And the ultimate transformation is that it dissolves. And if you have identified with that due to ego, you go through the greatest fear in the world and the greatest suffering in the world, which is the illusion of becoming non-existent. I'm reading a book now called Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. Well, he's done studies, but he relates basically that this fear of death due to this illusion, I'm not sure how much he understands the death of the soul, but it's practically the cause, if we analyze it, of everything we do. You know, even the deep attachment to family life, to a political, it's all a search for eternality, to make our mark, to have something greater than our corporal existence. But what we're actually searching for is actually the soul. Is actually a solution to that quest. The solution to that quest is yoga. But it has to begin with controlling the mind, and controlling the mind, extracting the mind. But the control of the mind, yoga is a very fascinating field. It goes from gross to subtle. But you can't go to subtle dharana dhyan samadhi or subtle pratyahara unless you deal with gross. And what's the grossest manifestation of the uncontrolled mind? It's the how you deal with others, and that's what the yams are. And the grossest manifestation of dealing with others is exploitation or violence. And if you don't rise above that platform, you haven't even come to first base on the platform of yoga. So ahimsa is essential. And ahimsa, it obviously begins with enmity. So the point I was making in terms of this seminar, and obviously I'm not going to give the whole seminar today, but the point I was making in terms of the seminar is enmity. The hardest type of enmity to give up is some kind of resentment because you feel it's justified. But it doesn't root out the feelings of hate. You may feel it's justified, but it doesn't rule out the feelings of hate in your heart. And if that is ignorant, then it's covering the light of the soul. Many ways you can look at the yoga process. But one way is that the mind is an instrument. And when it's in goodness, it's functioning in its original intended use, which is to be perfectly reflective and clear of both the soul and the idea, and I present this, is that it's understood in all psychology, philosophy, religion, etc. They're all trying to teach truth. What does that mean? It means the acknowledgement that a higher degree of perception leads to a higher degree of contentment. In other words, the more you see reality, the better you are. And the instrument by which you see reality is the mind. And if it's distorted by lower modes and the things that engender the lower modes, then one is not progressing in spiritual life. I spoke from a quote, I'm not sure where it was, but it really connected resentment it really connected resentment to someone just called me. I just want to make sure. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, because someone just called me on the phone, and then it usually sometimes means that, oh, I have my computer on if it ever goes. So this quote is the shadows of resentment keep our spiritual life light from shining through, never allowing us to fully experience who we are. That's what yoga is, to fully experience who we are. And how do you do it in the process of yoga? How do you do it in the process of yoga? The way you do it in the process of yoga is through the mind. The mind is purified. The mind becomes free from distortion. And then you have better perception. And hate, enmity, so much distorts our perception. You can see when you look through that lens, how it affects your vision of the world. Because the class is much longer than I can speak now. I'm only able to speak about it, some of the points. But I was also really really also, showing what a spiritual person is. A spiritual person is more concerned with what is, anyway, at some points I won't remember right now. So I also in the seminar dealt with what forgiveness is. And I actually found a really excellent article, because my presentation is a little psychological, but mostly philosophical. But I found this excellent article called On Forgiveness, A Philosophical Exploration by Charles L. Griswold. And he was a philosopher, and I love the way he approached it. He said, if you have to understand what forgiveness is, you have to understand what it is, when it's appropriate, and why one should do it. Because there's controversy about it. I mean, the famous story of the Amish. Their children were killed, and immediately they forgave. That's a question of when. Is that appropriate? I wasn't sure, actually. I wasn't sure. If there's an allowance, or if there are any conditions to forgiveness, some time required, according to the, if there's some moral outrage. The only reason I wasn't sure if the unilateral bestowal at the earliest moment, because I wasn't sure if it was consistent with human relationships and love of others that are mistreated. But I'll explain that so first, what is it, and minimum it's tempering some resentment and forswearing some revenge. That's minimum. Resentment itself means, comes from the word resentir, to again. There's a certain time, for sure, when again revisiting becomes morbid and against one's spiritual interest. So, when is it appropriate? I mean, is it only when the offender takes responsibility, when their anger is gone? You know, but the point I'm making, and I think the main point that my class was about, is why do you forgive? Forgoing any other question of exactly what is the right moment. If it's completely unilateral at the earliest moment, is there an appropriate time of moral outrage? I mean, in my own philosophical understanding and tradition, and I discussed this in the class through the law of karma, that if something happens to one self, forgiveness can happen immediately. It doesn't mean you have to develop a relationship with the person. It doesn't mean you have to associate with the person. But resentment is immediately tempered. Revenge is immediately tempered by the law of karma, because you understand and can see the person as an instrument of your own purification. And you can understand what the person has done to you, you have some responsibility for, by the law of karma. Otherwise, it wouldn't be coming to you. So there's some understanding like that. It's a question of, if it's on a relationship to you, is there some period of reasonable time? But my class wasn't about, so it's clearly what it is. When it should happen, there's a minor dispute. It's very generous when it should happen, whether the conditions require some type of responsibility from the offender, some period of time for one's anger to reside. But the real question in my class, and I think this is connected with yoga, is why? Is it just therapeutic? And sometimes people say, well, you should forgive as a gift to yourself. Right? And there are so many studies how it's a fact how harmful it is to yourself. On every moral, psychological, physical platform. But if it was just therapeutic, I mean, would forgiveness be amnesia? That you forget about it? Is that forgiveness? If it's just therapeutic, oh, now I'm forgiven, I have amnesia, I've forgotten about everything. But the real reason that one should forgive is that it is when the conditions are right, and they're quite, usually they're much more liberal than our own estimation. Of course, you know, there are cases of this unilateral earliest moment, but generally, when the conditions are right, why should we forgive? Because it is dharma. And what is dharma? Dharma is the appropriate response to your appropriate response to the circumstances in your environment to elevate your consciousness. Dharma ultimately means eternal nature. Because what we should be doing is dependent on what we are. And spiritual life means to awaken our eternal nature. So what is Dharma? Dharma in any circumstance is the appropriate response according to our present level of spiritual evolution. And maybe, you know, one man's food is another man's poison. Of course, there's universal principles that cut across the board. In all circumstances, one shouldn't do that. But there's also, there's also decisions that are made that are based on, whatever it is, there's a science revealed within the Vedas and the traditions of knowledge. There's a science of what you do in particular situations and the reason why you do that. It's moral. It's the correct decision. And the correct decision also happens to be the decision that's best for others and you. It's just like in Bhagavad Gita. Why should Arjuna fight in the war? It is universal interest. It is best for those he fights, and it's best for him. You're connecting. When you connect with Dharma, you're connecting with universal interest. It cuts across the board. It's best for everyone. And it can be analyzed like, so, myriad of circumstances and situations, and everyone, whether it calls for action, whether it calls for fighting, as the case of Arjuna, whether it calls for turning the other cheek in a particular circumstance, or whether it calls for tolerance in a particular situation, it's the appropriate decision. So when those conditions are right, whether you narrow those conditions or eliminate those conditions or extend them somewhat due to some psychological requirements to express love for someone who's been harmed near to you, the Dharma is the moral decision. It's the universal interest that is best for your consciousness and best for the person whom you are responding to. So that was the goal of my class, to argue for forgiveness, not necessarily to resolve the philosophical point of exactly when it's appropriate, but to extend in the class's mind when it's appropriate and narrow it down. Because sometimes, you know, even we have the condition where the offender takes responsibility and the person is begging us for forgiveness. In fact, one of the conditions that one has to see is the first condition one has to see is the criteria for the perpetrator. Was he ignorant? Was he youthful? Was he not responsible? Even if harm was done. Sometimes there are circumstances and conditions beyond one control that we ourselves would fall prey to if we had to go through the same life and circumstance that other person had to go through. But first you have to see, was a crime actually committed? Or culpable? Was the person culpable? But when the conditions are right, it's the appropriate decision to give up resentment and enmity that keeps the spiritual light from shining through, allowing us to fully experience who we are. There's the story of the bull. This is in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. The Marge Cricket is a great warrior, and he's getting bored because he's such a good leader, a good administrator, that there is nothing lacking in his administration. There's no crime. So he hears that one low-class man is beating a bull, and he immediately comes out with his sword to challenge it. He asks the bull, who has done this? And the bull wouldn't identify the perpetrator because he saw the perpetrator as a vehicle of his own. And then he goes, oh, you were Dharma. Then he said, you must be Dharma, because even in that circumstance, your action is appropriate according to reality. You are Dharma. Anyway, that's basically how I approach the issue in relationship to yoga. You have to perform Dharma. You have to perform Dharma if you want to understand the soul. You don't perform Dharma, the appropriate responses to your environment, based on this wealth and tradition of knowledge of the Vedas, then you can't progress in spiritual life. Now, there's many examples then establishing that, what I tried to do in my class, and then describe to narrow the conditions by which one should forgive. So I told there, first I'm not going to go through them all, but I had students meditate on things to see whether they would agree or not, whether the situation was appropriate for forgiveness, to help them gauge their own conditions. One story was, one story was actually a very interesting story. A girl in the integration of the South, she starts with civil rights workers, and they chose this one girl to integrate one segregated school. All the parents of that school, they pulled their kids out on that day, and they lined the streets protesting right in front of the school. This young girl was coming into the school with federal marshals and all kinds of verbal abuse, racial epithets were being thrown at her. She faced so much enmity and so much rage and so much hate. And then the police lady, the matron who was by her side, saw her murmuring to herself. And they asked her, what are you doing? She said, I'm praying that they may get God's mercy. The police lady was astounded and asked the little girl, well, why are you doing that? She said, well, don't you think they need God's mercy? So I asked people to meditate on that. Were the appropriate conditions for forgiveness there for the girl? Is that noble or not? When Nelson Mandela was leaving jail, I had just read this recently. Somehow I wrote a book or something. I think that reason to me, but oh yeah, Bill Clinton asked him, how do you, you know, don't you really how do you feel about these people? Don't you feel rejected? He said, no. Bill Clinton said, why? And Nelson Mandela said, because I want to be freed. I want to be freed. Booker T. Washington said, I should not allow any man to belittle my soul by making me hate him. It's a story of the saint and the scorpion. These two Brahmins are going across the river, and a scorpion is on the guy's hand. And the scorpion bites him. And then falls into the river. The Brahmin picks up the scorpion. And the scorpion bites the man again. And falls in the river. At the end, the other Brahmin was astounded. There's a very saintliness of this person, maybe a little bit foolish. And he says, why in the world have you kept on picking up that scorpion? Don't you know its nature is to sting you? He said, well, the nature of the scorpion is to sting one, and my nature is to forgive. So, anyway, there are many, many quotes. And then I gave many reasons to forgive. I explained from the standpoint of yoga. And then there's the standpoint of karma. Can't go into my elaborate descriptions there. But it made it pretty clear to people that what is happening to them is in them. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening. It's in them, and it's something that they themselves have done. And therefore, it's coming to them. The same thing that they have perpetrated in the past, which remains in them, is now coming in them to help them identify it and condemn it and root it out from themselves. And that's the way a saintly person sees the story of the Dura in the Mahabharata. He sacrificed so much for his family, and then because there was a fratricidal war, somehow or other his nephew became accusatory towards him, and without cause drew him out of his kingdom, told him never to come back. Told him never to come back, threw him out of the kingdom. And called him the most harsh name. And I forgot which saint said it, but he said, criticism is worse than envy. Because envy is when it's in the heart and criticism when it comes out. He said that criticism is worse, and hostile criticism born out of envy, is worse than being lanced. because the spear can only pierce your body, but criticism can pierce your heart. So he said the worst thing is to hurt him. And it did hurt the Dura. But because of his spiritual and philosophical acumen, he was able to extract himself and see within the external energy the person that was acting impulsive and cruel. He saw the internal energy, the deliberate hand of the divine will, using that person's illusion for his benefit, to give him direction to leave the intrigues of the palace and to purify his heart. He actually saw this person who was cruel was carrying the message of God for his edification, his direction in life. That's another way a spiritual person looks. It's hard for him to hold resentment when he sees that what's happening to him is coming by the divine will in response to something that one has done. I look at it that way. We all have our friends and enemies. I have people that just don't treat me nicely and unreasonably so. And I look at it that way. I just can't grab onto resentment. I look at it in many ways. I look at the person's frame of reference, which may be limited. The person may be, you know, sometimes a person can do something, can be sincere and want to do good, but actually has a wrong frame of reference about the situation. But I also see the hand of God. There's no way once you are in debt, once you are entrenched, not entrenched, but once you are absorbed in a spiritual tradition and you understand the dynamics of how this world works to purify you, it's hard to keep resentment. Again, in my own understanding, I give people some period of time psychologically to express themselves. But I can see. But of course, some people may have gone through worse things than I've gone through. And again, it doesn't mean relationship with a person. It just means that it no longer rules your life. That the resentment is tempered, no sense of revenge, no ill wishing of the person. They don't control your life. And here's an interesting reason, and that's hypocrisy. Because I could see myself always wanting forgiveness. But not giving it to the extent that I want for myself. And there were different meditations I gave for the class. But one meditation I gave is I asked them, how would you be doing if you are only forgiven by God to the degree that you have forgiven others? Psychologically, we want to tell God, I make mistakes, I'm okay, I'm sincere, right? Please forgive me. but we don't want to extend that same feeling to others. I believe it was Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Lakshaka Sridhar Maharaj, who said, the greatest hypocrisy is to always be begging God for mercy, for kindness beyond what you deserve, but then being surprised or envious when that mercy comes to another. Another person gets something beyond. Right? He doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that. So it's a question of having integrity. Sometimes seeing things in circumstances of anyway, there's a lot, but I mean, there's so many other reasons. But basically, that was my main fact, that the reason why is when requisite conditions are met is because it's what a good person would seek. Because it should express your ideals of being merciful. We only want mercy for ourselves and justice for others. Isn't it the greater the things we forgive, the more mercy, the greater it makes us? The more mercy, is mercy a great quality? Mercy is undeserved kindness. So if we forgive, even perhaps if it's not earned, doesn't it express our ideal? And don't those ideals include spiritual growth and truth, respectfulness, some moral qualities? It's a moral quality. It's a yama. It's a yama. And it's required to control the mind and purge the consciousness, the shadows of resentment that prevent us from having the spiritual light shining through it and seeing us for what we are. And not to speak of how harmful those things are for our consciousness. After the war, Dhritarashtra's 100 sons were killed. He was so resentful. And then the same Vidura came to him. Same Vidura came to him. And said, the hate that you have for the Pandavas is like trying to harm someone by picking up a burning iron rod and throwing it. At the same time, the hate that you have, that you hope to harm them with, is something that's flowing through your own heart and harming yourself. It reminds me of when I researched this, one of the stories that we did, it was really kind of far out. The teacher in her classroom was just having so much difficulty. Having so much difficulty because the children, how children are they get cliques, they hate other kids, they harass people. It's just horrible what happens to this kid. I understand it's getting even worse than when I went to school. And when I remember going to school and what life was like going to school, growing up, and entering the world of competition for sense gratification, and not having any real training and real knowledge to look at the world, being in such ignorance, I really, really want to become serious about spiritual life. No joke. I don't want to be born again. I want to become alive. I don't want to have to go again. And you know, be born in the crib with the doting relatives that you're bound to, their expectations for the rest of your life. Because, and you know, there is some obligation to do. And then have to face the karma. Karma is channeled into the body at the end of life. It's an unlimited storehouse. Bill Gates may have had the worst karma, may have had just one seed of wealth. Maybe the Yamaraj spun the, you know, wheel of fortune and maybe he got the jackpot. But maybe in the next life, if he doesn't become enlightened, and the poor, because they can't exist in the same body. See, there's contradictory karma. They can't exist in the same conscience. Can't be poor and rich at the same time. I definitely just thinking. Don't want to. And I don't want to have to go to school and have to hate all the other little kids, being cooked, whatever. And the teacher was concerned. So she tried to do something with that. So she gave them all potatoes and said to every enemy, every kid you don't like, write his name on a potato. You can keep it captured in a bag. So the teacher kept it, but after a week, the potatoes started to rot and the children wanted to give them up. And the teacher let them keep them. No, you have to keep them. You have to keep them. And she wanted to give me the idea that hate harms yourself. Many things I did, but I'm just going to. But one thing that's really powerful, I do a lot of free writing because when you speak, I don't want to just give a class. I want people to assimilate me. So I gave the people an exercise, and it was very, very effective. I gave them this meditation that they go to a counselor to give up their resentment. They lay down on the couch. And when they look at the counselor, they see themselves. They said, meditate what you as a counselor will tell yourself to give up your resentment. And then I did free writing. So the people were just writing it. And then I broke it up and had them discuss among themselves. And I thought that was really effective. Because you always want application of the principles. So anyway, in summary, when the liberal conditions are met, I try to extend those conditions so that one should forgive. I mean, give up the resentment, forswore the revenge, and go on. There was one very nice quote in that regard which said, forgiveness means to give up all hope for a better path. Anyway, I don't know how appropriate it is. I guess it's appropriate for this class on Wednesday also, but when I speak in the yoga world, the first thing you have to do is, and speak outside, is you speak according to the people's frame of reference. So I try to talk, speak on very broad subjects. Anyone like to ask a question?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, this last line you said, forgiveness means to give up all hope for what?
A better past.
A better past?
Past.
P-A-S-T.
Yes.
All hope for a better past. So, in other words, to not wish that it could have happened some other way.
Yeah, because it's right. Because it's not. It's not going to happen another way.
Right.
And there's no use beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
Okay, Gail. Well, thank you. Hey, anybody else like to ask a question?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Govardhan.
Hare Krishna, Govardhan. I got all those reds that Dorothy and the Tulsi leaves. And thank you both so much. It's just,
so you got it, Maharaj?
I did. It's 11:30 last night, so I woke up. I went to bed, actually. I left there at 11:30. I got back here at 2. I didn't go to bed till 3. So I woke up at 7 o'clock, and then I began to chant. And then I just fasted all day and then did my puja in the evening. So I just, so nice having those fresh tulsi that your wife sent. Thank you. Anybody else?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything else, Govardhan? Your face up.
No, okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, anyway, thank you all for coming on the class. And
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Karunika.
Karunika, so nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you, Tim. Maharaj, you helped me so much, so many years ago, with forgiveness. You are the perfect person to teach this.
Anyway, I don't know about that, but I remember when I was in my place, the old place I had, on the roof there, and then you came by. Do you remember that? I was speaking on, I think, the Wives of the Brahmins Bless from the 10th Canto, or which story was it?
Yes.
I was doing some 10th Canto. Do you remember which one it was?
Yes,
the I remember that. Okay. For the Sangha listeners, Karunika is from Christchurch and just went through a horrendous earthquake, which in many, many ways painfully ravaged the city, the community, et cetera. It's nice to hear on the Sangha. Anyone else like to say hello? Great to hear from you, Karunika. Okay. That'll be good. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.